Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Phidias Club. This is episode 81 for January 2017, Policies and Propaganda. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Phidias Club. This is episode number 81. We're in January 2017. My name is Patrick Beja, and we are living in the world of Donald Trump. Or are we? I mean, he is now a president of the United States, and the United States is arguably the most important and biggest and, largest country in the world, economy-wise and everything. So, yeah, kind of. Some people on this panel might disagree. We have, as always, of course, Turkey, who is from Saudi Arabia. How's it going, Turkey?
All good. I'm just glad and thank God he's not my president.
So you're one of those people, I see.
Hey, he isn't my president.
No, I know, but you're glad that he isn't. So I get it. Wendy, you are in Sweden, but you are an American citizen, so he is your president. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I was actually joking with someone today saying I have a podcast I'm doing, or maybe it's a therapy hour for me. I'm not sure. So we'll see how you guys can help me.
All right. We'll try at least. We'll try. And lastly, a newcomer on the show. Thank you so much for being with us. Dan, you are from Mexico, actually. So I'm sure you're going to have a few interesting things to say as well. How are you doing?
I'm surviving. I guess that's a good signal. And as Turkey mentioned before, well, Trump is not my president, but he's the uncomfortable, noisy neighbor that we have upstairs. So.
Yeah, I guess he does have some more even influence on your, I don't want to say everyday life, but certainly he's more of a concern for you than maybe for me, I suppose. I'm in Finland at the moment. Although what he's doing might have consequences in this region as well, because the strengthening of Russia, a retreat of the U.S. From the international scene, means an increase of power for Russia, and that might be interesting for Finland. Of course, I was in France for a good while, and we have some news from there. And I'm sure many interesting things happened in each of our country and regions, but let's not pretend like the inauguration of Donald Trump isn't the biggest, the most important story here. So we're going to start with that, I think, with the caveat that, you know, I think we've proven over the last few episodes that we really manage and, or at least try to be neutral, I want to say, and objective in our understanding of situations and analysis, the plural of analysis.
How would an idiot as a president? How?
and being neutral doesn't mean thinking everything is equal or everything is fine from one point of view. I think sometimes there are things that are less than ideal, and some things are not as good as some other things. So I just want to put the caveat here before we even start talking that some concerns are fair to have, even though they are not, you know, your concerns if you're from another side of the political spectrum. And with that in mind, I'm going to start with a very quick discussion, or rant, I should say, by saying that I think there are two sides of the discussions around Trump, and very often those two get complete. They're connected, but they get completely mixed up, and one is used to sort of dismiss the other. And I think those two sides are the policies and the megalomania. The policies, I think many of us will disagree with those policies. I don't know about you, Dan, but I know that Wendy and probably Turkey are more on the liberal side of the political spectrum. And so we'll disagree with some of those policies, maybe even sometimes be alarmed by some of those policies. But they are, you know, policies from the conservative movement in the US, and I think they're a matter of deciding what you want for your country, and regardless of who won the popular vote and the electoral college, that doesn't really matter. The fact is that he won the election, and so it's fair that he's going to put in place some policies that liberal people will disagree with vehemently, but still, that's what he was elected to do. And it's, I mean, the way I look at it, I don't understand why you would want to proceed like that, but it's normal that he would do that. The other side is the megalomania, and I would even say the propaganda that we're starting to see coming out of the administration. Putting it plainly, it's the lies that Sean Spicer has said during a press conference, the first press conference, specifically about the number of people that were at the inauguration. And more generally, you know, there are more of those falsehoods that are being told in spite of reality, of what reality is. And I know some people are arguing, well, you know, you can always explain things a different way, but I disagree on some things. You can arrange the facts to make them say what you want sometimes, or the numbers, but sometimes there are also objective facts and objective truths. I understand a lot of people's points of views, and I try to explore them and you know, go with their understand what's in their heads. But sometimes, you know, things like, let's say, the fact that the Earth is round, that's objectively true, and we don't see it, we can't feel it here, but we know it. The fact that the Earth is more than 5,000 years old, the fact that vaccines do not cause autism. You know, that's just a plain fact. And whether or not you agree with
But Obama disagrees with you.
I don't think he does. But
Trump really disagrees with you.
Well,
did
Trump,
I just say Obama?
Yes, he does. But yeah. I mean, going back to the inauguration thing, it's really alarming that this kind of, and we know that all politicians lie, right? But there is a line that is one step further, and it's kind of difficult to know when you've crossed it, but when you do cross it, you know that you have. And in this case, they're crossing this falsehood line, it seems, as a matter of habit or even policy. And that is a concern, and it's fair to be concerned about this, to be very concerned. And when you couple this with, you know, the nationalistic views, which are, again, fair to have because that's what they were elected on, but nationalistic plus propaganda, plus megalomania. I think also it's fair to say that he is very megalomaniac. And you know, he didn't turn into a president. He's still Trump, the candidate. And many of us, including me, were thinking, well, okay, let's hope that he becomes a little bit more presidential. And many of the things that a lot of people were saying, well, you know, I'm going to vote for him because I dislike Hillary Clinton. And we all know that some of the things he's saying are so outrageous that he's never going to do them. Well, it turns out it seems like he's attempting to do them. And so, again, there are some people that will never, ever be convinced that he is not going to be a great president. You know, there are some people who are extremely happy that he's here, who do not care about the fact that, you know, he's instituting some kind of propaganda machine. And these people will say, oh, he's exaggerating, blah, blah, blah. I don't think I'm exaggerating here. I'm just stating, I think, what is something that is objectively true. You know, they are saying very demonstrably inaccurate, false things and presenting them as truth. This is Orwellian. And it is fair to be concerned by this. So nationalism and this kind of propaganda and the megalomania all put together make for, again, I think, a fair, an objective concern. And saying that, oh, no, everything's fine and all of the other politicians are crap anyway, is taking it a little bit too far. I understand that you are concerned about politicians in general, but the reason why some things are complex is that some things are complex. And sometimes issues are not simple to solve, like putting up a wall on the border. So that was my rant. It was shorter than the one I had on the episode 78, where I talked about why people voted for Trump and why I understand why they did. But I hope that people, even, you know, no matter your side of the issue, I hope people agree that this is a reasonable explanation of the situation. I think, Wendy, you wanted to say something. I don't know if I cut you off, but do you have a reaction to this?
Oh, I have just so much to say. One thing, though, so maybe people know this or not, but I'm a psychotherapist, so I have a view on things that, you know, maybe slightly different in the sense of his personality disorder, is what I would call it. I mean, so I've spent years in training for various things, and there is not a training I've had in the last 10 years where we haven't discussed personality disorders, narcissism, personality disorder, and other things where someone's like a bottomless pit for needing affirmation and attention, where we have not said, a perfect example is Donald Trump. And then 10 years later, our president is this man. So, of course, it's very, you know, infused into my brain that he's the typifies this thing. But it's really interesting to watch him, and the whole crowd size at the inauguration really felt like, oh, okay, well, here's classic evidence of that. So the narcissistic personality disorder ultimately is someone who believes they are at a level that they're not really at, and they only deserve to be with people of a certain caliber, and they deserve praise in constant forms, that they do nothing wrong, they're always right. They're very challenging people to live with, work with, love. There's like a trigger warning. I kept thinking we need a trigger warning for all the people in this country who have been abused, neglect, you know, all the things people have gone through. But for all of those people who have been partnered with someone with a personality disorder, I can't even imagine what it's like, because it is so difficult to deal with. So that's my foundation of some of this thinking. He's not well. And that,
well, I mean,
maybe that's the, simplifying, but
no, I think
some
the inauguration thing, the numbers don't matter. I mean, what this is a great example. When he's president, you're like, it doesn't really matter that he got more or less than Obama in what inauguration. It doesn't, like, if he's president now and this issue isn't so deeply ingrained in his personality, you have to act a little bit presidentially and let it go. It doesn't matter. And that's,
well,
kind of
you, you bring up a really important thing. Act presidential, be presidential. That would require some social context to understand how to do that. Some reading of a room that we are seeing again and again and again that he doesn't really have. For example, so he makes a big deal about the crowd size. Then his first meeting with Congress, they have some kind of dinner, luncheon thing. He walked from person to person, didn't matter which party or who it was, to argue with them about the crowd size, to get some affirmation that he is better than everyone saying he is not. And then he does his first interview with someone from ABC. As they're walking out of the interview, he pauses at a picture of the inauguration, points to it, and is showing him, well, the camera stops here, but if you go back, there's still millions of people who needs to do this is not someone who has the ability to sort of recognize what being the president is. So here's the sick thing. He now does have a lot of power, power that would match kind of the ego that he has always had. I mean, who plates everything in gold? That tells you something maybe about at its core, there is a bottomless pit for attention and for being right. So what happens with alternative facts or whatever, you know, that's the official terms they use.
Yeah.
The alternative facts is that
just to feeds this. Clarify this, alternative facts might exist. You know, there might be different facts that are also true that might contradict some of the facts you have. And that's a perfectly fair thing to say. But in this case, it wasn't other facts. It was not facts. It was falsehoods, right? It wasn't alternative right. facts, what they're trying to label with a different word, which is inaccurate.
Right. I was making quote marks you couldn't see in the
right,
air.
Right.
Alternative
no,
facts.
No, but I mean,
right.
I think that's an important distinction. But you know, there have been presidents who have had, you know, personality issues. I think to an extent, if you want to be president, you have to. Right, exactly.
Right.
This one does feel different. It feels like, I mean, does that impede his ability to be president? Not necessarily, not mathematically. I would think that, you know, the fact that he doesn't recognize reality might not help him make the right decisions, but the fact that he's he has a need for affirmation doesn't necessarily make him a bad president.
No, and I think that's all of them. They wouldn't be there if they didn't have huge egos. Absolutely. Mm. I think what happens here is, and I read this recently, and you know, who knows what you hear from where, but someone was, you know, in the close to the president sort of said, when he's stressed out and tired, his decisions get sloppy. He's less in control. He's anger, you know, they're talking about this person who is going to have nothing but high stress stakes, is going to be tired for the next 4 years. So you're looking at someone whose predisposition plus the, in my opinion, narcissism creates this sort of pretty terrible combination, but he also has this thing he's been creating. And let's be honest, the Republicans have been marketing for 10 years strong, which is we can't believe anything anyone says unless we get it from our source. So what Trump is, he's in that same vein, and he will play that and he will play that. That will not end for the next 4 years. He will play that anything that contradicts what he wants, what he believes, whatever, is falsehood. And the challenge is, as a culture, we had decided what we could kind of agree on before. We had some foundational things, and this has been sort of flipped upside down. And so that's why we're in such a different place now than other presidents. Other presidents would say, wow, they think I look bad. Or like the Women's March. If a president had realized, wow, millions of women marched against me, wow, I really got to figure out how I can try to reach those people and make them feel wanted. Or their ego would require them to do something in a direction that might be more inclusive. And in Trump's case, it's denial. Denial is his response.
And those, I mean,
five hippies or whatever, you know.
The falsehoods aspect is definitely that, you know, you're right. There has been a lot of movement towards you can't trust anything. Anything is untrustable. And I understand where it comes from. There have been issues with journalism, scientific research, all of this, but they've taken it, the indiscriminate, you know, undefined they have taken it so far that, again, as we've been saying for about a year now, facts don't matter. And that is a concern, again, for the very, I think, fair, objective, and neutral reason that if you don't base your decisions on facts, on reality, you're going to make inaccurate decisions. And yes, you can point to the fact, to the you know, 10% of the time when you followed your gut, you did make a better decision. Yes, and you're going to point to those and say, this is why we should follow our gut. But the reality is 80 or 90% of the time, the correct decision is made when you base it off facts. So that denial of reality is, again, I think, a fair concern. But let's
yeah.
And you know, I can't believe that we have to get it down to this level, you know, they have been mm-hmm. article. I think the journalist, the media, and again, some people will never trust the media except, you know, whatever side they're on, but they have had to explain how to define a lie to make sure that everything is black and white and explained. This is what a lie is. Okay. Can we analyze what this context brings? Okay. Yes. So yes, it is a lie. I can't believe that it's been so distorted that we have to go, and maybe it's good, you know, maybe it's a good exercise that we have to come back to the fundamentals of discourse. But, all right, we've talked a lot. Let's wait. Let's leave Dan for the last part of it and ask Turkey how things have been viewed with this inauguration.
I'm trying to get my thoughts together. Seriously, this guy is unbelievable. It's an inauguration. I think a lot of people watched it here. And the fact that he's making a big fuss out of how many people attended is just making people wonder what's wrong with this guy. Seriously, like, as you guys said, who cares how many people attended the inauguration? He's the president. That's it. End of story. Other than that, it's people are just watching and seeing what's going on with him being president at the moment. And apparently the expectations that all what he was doing was propaganda and he wasn't serious about what he was saying is just not true. This guy was serious about the stuff he was saying. He's actually going ahead and implementing a lot of the policies he promised to implement. And some of them are just crazy. And really, we don't know what's going on.
Which ones are a concern for you guys?
Well, the number one right now that he started with these the immigration policies for what I think six Islamic countries where he is now banning them from traveling into the States at the moment. I just got a notification today by email from Qatar Airways telling me about the ban, that these people of these countries are not allowed to get on flights on Qatar Airways, for example. As to what the information they received. So it's kind of freaking people out. Like, if he's starting with these countries, who knows who's next?
But, you know, to be fair, I mean, again, we could argue for a very long time about whether or not it's a good decision. I certainly think that this is, you know, taking a bulldozer to get a nail out of your house or something, some metaphor where he's being way too forceful. And certainly I don't think it's going to achieve the goals that he is trying to achieve, which is make the country safer. I think it's and the isolation is, again, very much of a concern because it takes the world in a direction which is more country versus country. I completely understand the America first philosophy, but this is why we haven't had wars, I think, in the West for 50 years. It's because we have intertwined our economies and lives so much that we don't have it's a bigger cost. It's a higher cost of making war than trying to get along in a very complicated diplomatic environment, which is sometimes incredibly frustrating.
I don't get the concept of making America first. America is based. The entire concept of the United States of America is about immigrants. When you stop and you ban immigrants from coming in, I don't see how you're going to make America great. America was built on immigrants. It was established by immigrants. And it survives on immigrants.
So I agree with that.
I don't see the concept of making America great when you go. And the countries he picked are mostly war-torn countries. So he's basically saying, you know what? Your country is war torn, you're being shot at, you're being murdered and killed and so on. I really don't care. Stay in your country. This is not the place where you can come for safety.
And again, I think he picked
Yemen,
yeah,
Iraq, Syria, Iran, Somalia. He picked those countries out of all the countries. He did not even pick stable countries. None of the list is a stable country. Well, maybe Iran considered a stable country, but that's it. He hasn't
picked the biggest irony is that this is to fight terrorism, but none of the countries that people, the terrorists from 9/11 originated from are on this list. So it's kind of very difficult to reconcile again.
Well, because he has business in these countries. He doesn't have business in Syria. Well, he doesn't have any business in Iraq or Iran or Somalia or Sudan or whatever.
Maybe even if he doesn't, the U.S. does. So, but okay, this is a really important aspect of it. And I think this is the more liberal and I would say humane view of the whole thing. But it's still what he said, you know, for once.
Wait. It's not humane or liberal view. This is what America is. You can't come and deny the basis of the country that it was established upon and say, no, this is America. We're going to do it this way. That's not America. That's not no more America. I can get it if it comes from a different country. If it comes from a European country, I can understand it. Those countries, I can get the concept that they're protecting their country. But America is a country of immigrants. Every single person in the U.S., the entire U.S. Congress are immigrants, whether they were fifth
or
generation,
second
first
or third generation,
second,
yeah.
Third, fifth, tenth, they are all immigrants. The entire, basically almost an entire, I don't know if they have any Native Americans in that Congress, but with the exceptions of Native Americans, they're immigrants. That's the basis of that country.
But that doesn't mean you have to stay like that forever. The country is whatever the people say it is. And the heritage is important for sure, but it's absolutely the, you know, people's right to say now we want to do things differently. And they have said we want to do things differently. And Donald Trump, maybe for I think the first time in history, is applying exactly what he said he was going to do. And he's doing it. And for that, again, I disagree on the policy side. It's hard to condemn him for doing exactly what he said, even if we disagree, for doing exactly what he said he was going to do, including that abhorrent wall that he is trying to get built now.
So here's a question. So how about the concept that he has said that he will give prioritize Christians in those countries for immigration?
I disagree, but if he said it, I don't know that he said exactly that, but if he did, and he's, you know, the people voted, this is nationalism, and I think it's harmful in the long run, but he's doing it. And to get back to the wall, Dan, what's the reaction? I think we can all imagine, but maybe you'll surprise us. What's the reaction in Mexico?
Well, we have a big problem in there because you were speaking at the beginning about alternative realities. And for example, you can see that if you follow, I don't know, the official policies and the official image that a politician has been constructed for himself, you have a more centered opinion. However, Donald Trump comes from the outside. He's an outsider. He knows media. He doesn't know very well politics. But that's not that didn't affect the results for the last elections. Getting back to something that Wendy was mentioning before, I believe that he sees himself more like the ringmaster from a circus, and he wants everything that he wants it done. If he has said something, he wants
it to everybody happen. Right?
That's correct. He wants everybody to listen and do it as he has been saying it. So, for example, we had a very interesting week, especially because of the decisions. And there's a particularity here. It's in a position, Donald Trump, that he's damned if he does it and he's damned if he doesn't. Although a lot of people voted for him saying, well, most of the politicians don't make up for the promises. I remember Guantanamo Bay, that was one of the promises from Obama, and that didn't happen. However, pretty much everything that Donald Trump had been saying have been coming to, well, not to fruition, but it has been initialized, the wall. It's one of the sort of a power play because it's one of his main promises of campaign, was one of the bases that a lot of people voted for him. However, it doesn't make sense. I remember that just a few minutes after it was announced, people like, let me remember, it is a Nobel Prize winner, Krugman, Paul Krugman was tweeting back just mentioning how illogical was to build a wall. And besides the wall, Donald Trump later mentioned, well, remember that we're not going to pay for this. Mexico is going to pay for this.
Of course, that's the
main promises.
Yeah.
And for example, as I was mentioned at the beginning, well, he's a noisy neighbor. And for example, just imagine that your neighbor next door wants to build a swimming pool and he wants you to pay for that. That doesn't make sense. However, that was one of his promises. And a lot of people, well, say, as long as it doesn't affect me, it's all right. It goes back to something that Turkey was mentioning before. He's not focusing perhaps in the image of, well, the United States has a common enemy right now. However, anyone who is not from the United States, well, he comes second. It's part of the campaign, America First. However, if we go back to the megalomaniac aspect, you can complete the phrase and say, well, America First and then the world? What is his world domination plan, or what's the deal with this guy? Especially because
he's going to expand. He just doesn't care about anyone else, which...
Yeah.
Again, nationalism, that's what it is.
He doesn't have to. That's correct. He doesn't have to. But however, most of the decisions that he has made don't only apply to the United States. It applies to the rest of the world, which is what worries me, and especially in the case of Mexico, in the case of Canada, because there is a renegotiation coming for the NAFTA treaty. It's something that has been working for us for the last 20 years. And yes, Mexico is the weakest link in these three countries. For example, at the beginning of the week, we have some comments from the Canada's prime minister, where he pretty much said, well, Canada is friends with the people of Mexico, but our national interests come first and friendship is second. I understand that perfectly. It's pretty much it pretty much goes in line with what the vision of Donald Trump is. And actually, it comes with the worldview in a way, because remember that we have the Brexit situation, where it goes, I believe, with something in this same line.
So
can I throw something out
theory
that might be interesting? He's keeping his campaign promises. So I got this theory that I haven't fully formed yet, but I think there's something to it. And since I'm an American, I can say this. So, and I'm not in America, so no one can stone me. but I kind of think we got the president we deserve. And what I mean is, we're all a little narcissistic. We're all a little materialistic. We're all a little combative online and in our tweets. I mean, it's like he's a creation of our own evil side, right? Like he's not there because it didn't work. It worked because there's enough discord in the country. There's enough disagreeing and battling, and we haven't trusted politicians for so long. And that's because politicians have never kept their word, right? So suddenly here's a guy who keeps his word and we're all losing our minds. It's because none of us believed that would happen, because we have no faith in any of the system. So it's really, I know that's alarming, and other Americans are like, oh, what? But think about it for a second. This doesn't happen out of nowhere. This happens over years of, I mean, let's be honest, the Republicans' behavior with President Obama is such a setup for this moment. We elected people into Congress whose main job was to make government not work. That's what they wrote. That was the ticket they wrote on, the Tea Party.
That is one of the things that frustrates me the most when I talk with Americans. This myth that government can't do anything. And, you know, when you employ yourself making sure that it doesn't, and then point to it and say, look, it doesn't work. The more frustrating thing is, how do people not recognize this, you know?
Go ahead.
Is it the division that is... And I know that many people say it's the same on the left and the right. Honestly, that's not the image I get. And maybe that's because I'm more liberal, but... And I understand that there is some of it happening on the left, but it seems like, as you were saying, a lot of the Congress was trying to make sure things didn't happen. How, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, they said out loud in public forums, our agenda is to get rid of anything Obama produces. So that was clear. This isn't hidden. Everyone knew. And you watched it happen over and over and over again. In fact, I mean, as much as I didn't want Donald Trump as president, I felt such relief for Hillary Clinton. Could you imagine just another 4 years? And she would be demonized times 20. I mean, Obama probably would have had it easy compared to what she would have had. That is, and they own House and all the Senate and the House, and soon they will own the Supreme Court. So it's their turn to be on the playground. And here's the trick that they're going to have to pull off, because the majority, I think, of regular Republicans are really nervous about Trump. This isn't the guy they wanted. This is the only guy they had to choose from. And that's how a lot of them feel. I know a lot of Republicans. Most of the people I know actually in America are Republicans. And they felt very much like their hands were tied. They couldn't vote for Hillary Clinton. They can't stand her. And Trump is not who they would pick, but he's at least maybe the Republicans in Congress or whatever can help him. What no one counted on is that the man who said all that crazy stuff is actually crazy enough to make sure all that stuff happens, or attempt to make that stuff happen. So now Republicans are in a position of power. They have all this stuff. What are they going to do with it? I have one thought. They let Trump crash and burn and impeach him, and then they have Mike Pence to be their puppet. That's one idea. And another is, you know, anyone who's tried to rein in Donald Trump, Chris Christie is a great example. You're out. If you don't follow in line, you're not loyal, you aren't what all dictators need, then you're out. And so he eliminates all contradictory voices. He eliminates anyone, and even people who are just going to be reasonable. It doesn't matter. None of that impacts him.
And
so,
you know, I think that is the biggest concern that everyone from the outside looking in has. It's not so much that he's a Republican and that he's implementing the policies of a Republican. Again, I think it's easy to mistake our frustration here for that, because certainly both of those things are frustrating to many of us. The fact that he's implementing those policies we again, as I said many times, vehemently disagree with is frustrating. And I think we would be voicing that opinion no matter what. But that's the political game. The second concern, which is a lot more frustrating, and actually that's the one that's a little bit scary, is, as we said many times, the falsehoods and the propaganda and the megalomania and the narcissism and the fact that we don't know. It's hard to fault him for doing what he said he's going to do, even though we didn't expect him to. But we don't think, who thinks that he is a responsible he's going to be responsible in the post that he had. Until a few days ago, I would have said, well, we'll see what he does. Now I'm like, I'm not so sure I want to see anymore. But anyway,
I have one question in there, Patrick. Sorry if I interrupt. Yeah. But actually, how much control does Donald Trump have over the government? Because this will be a very interesting point on American history, to see what's the weight that the Congress actually really have. And for example, we were talking at the beginning about, I don't know, alternative realities. And we have a public reality that we can see on Twitter if you follow the account of the president or the different account for Donald Trump. And for example, you can see how the stock exchange changes even the money value changes after a declaration. For example, this last week, it happened something really interesting after the announcements of the wall. The peso got stronger. It didn't get weaker because it was a very unrealistic view. So, for example, what is the actual impact that his decisions or the initiatives that he can propose have in the real world?
One thing to know just about presidents in general, they don't have as much power as we all think they do. We always say the most powerful man in the world. So you take the economic decisions of the previous president, that's where they show up in the next presidency, but you get the blame. So there's a sign on the president's desk that says the buck stops here. And that means the blame goes nowhere else in theory, but we have a president, I'm sure he's already taken that off his desk because he's not going to take responsibility for anything. But part of the reality is, the impact isn't as strong, but if you're proposing and pulling off policies, I mean, the economic ripples of tweeting about a company that you think is garbage and then the impact of that. I mean, it's careless. It's callous. It's unbelievable.
It is.
And I really wish Twitter would just go out of business so this could stop.
Well, he'll find another way to express himself.
He'll find something different, definitely. Yeah.
But you know, to be fair, we all thought that the stock market was going to suffer, and it's been doing well. This America First policy is economically apparently being well received by the stock market. And I wonder, you know, until for the candidacy period, they had a lot of people were saying, well, but Hillary, you know, a lot of the defense of the president, of the candidate of Trump was, yes, but Hillary. And now Hillary isn't there anymore. So I wonder, and I understand that, you know, the administration is trying to make it into, yes, but the media, you know, it's the media's fault. It's the, and again, as I was saying, a lot of the hashtag MAGA people, you know, make America great again, people are not going to trust the media anyway. But I do think there's a lot of people who voted for Trump or who were hesitant or who didn't vote for Hillary, who are going to now be looking at what he does and what he says in a slightly more, you know, objective way, because there isn't a Hillary to fall back to. And the horrible truth is that he might manage to make things happen policy side. For, you know, economically, there are multiple companies that are saying, well, we're going to bring back factories in the US. We're going to make it happen. We don't... And even though, you know, it might hurt economically on a large scale, some people might get jobs back in those places that elected him. So really, I want to separate the two, but I don't know. There are so many. I hope I'm not coming off completely alarmed, because I certainly am at 2 a.m. when I'm watching tweets. But when I look at things realistically, I'm very concerned. But it's not like I'm a raving lunatic waving my hands in the air and going like, oh, this is all, you know, the world's ending. It's just objectively, this is concerning.
It's not ending?
I think he's taking it in a direction which is more dangerous. Yes, I think the nationalism, the America First policy encourages everyone to say, well, in that case, F you, I'm going to go me first too. Yeah. And this is not how you build a more peaceful world. And no matter how unsafe it feels, again, you need reality to understand reality. No matter how unsafe it feels, it's not as unsafe as it's been before. And policy and politics and economy are complicated things that you can't reduce to just, well, I don't have a job, so everything sucks. And I just
want to see the results of his economic policies in a year or two when the entire cost of living increases in the US.
Might happen.
Right. And it will. I mean, if we're going to fight with China, if we're going to make them our enemies and Russia our friends, we're in real trouble with all of our Walmart stores. I mean, what are we going to buy for ourselves?
If we're going to start taxing all of Mexico products, then everything is going to increase.
Avocados
in the state.
Gone.
Yeah. That's
gone.
But you know,
something.
Maybe... Sorry, go ahead.
That's something interesting. And for example, let's just remember that last week we're 2.5 minutes, according to the doomsday clock, to midnight. So we're actually moving that direction. Yeah. But for example, getting back to international policies, you will have contradictory results, because, for example, if you close a factory, I don't know, in Mexico, in Canada, in China, and you put it in Mexico, it means about, let's say...
In the US or Mexico?
In the US, you're right. That was wishful thinking. if you close a factory everybody in the world, but in the United States, and you place those jobs in there, you will get, let's say, 2,000 jobs. However, if you close the frontiers, at least in the case of Mexico, there are about 6 million jobs depending on the trade with one country. Use with one country. Mm. Imagine what happens with the rest of the world.
And you know, but to get the other side of this, and I think this is a very important argument that you're making, Dan, but to get to Wendy's point that, oh, avocados gone and, you know, fruits gone. And some people, I'm sure, are listening to this and thinking, I don't care about your damn avocados. I just want a job. And if a factory comes in my town and I can go work in that factory, I will happily eat potatoes instead of avocados. I don't need those damn avocados, right? So,
but the one thing too, though, that the automation of jobs is what's taken most of the jobs out of the United States. Not simply factory. I mean, yeah, we don't put our iPads together. That's done in China. We could bring that back and would still, but the majority of jobs have left for automation purposes. Are we going to undo that? I mean, I'm not sure.
I don't know. There are hundreds of thousands of factory workers working at Foxconn alone, putting iPads and iPhones together.
Because they're cheap. They're not as expensive as if they do it in the U.S. In the U.S., they're going to do more automation because to lower the cost. They don't need to do automation in China at the moment because the cost is already low.
But most
of those factories are going to move to the U.S. sooner or later because the cost in China is slowly increasing.
I think they're going to move to Africa or to somewhere else that is cheaper. But
if Africa can handle it, they'll move it. Africa's not ready for this yet. So that's what's happening. Automation will come in as long as the cost for hiring people is high. They're going to push for automation to lower the cost of their products because they want to sell more. They don't want to sell less.
Yeah. Well, all right. I think we've said our piece on the matter. There's been a lot of speculation on policies as well, and I'm sure a lot of people will listen to this and think, oh no, but if you do trade like this and the trade deals weren't good, but you can actually make it work if you do this or that. And again, this
president, prove us wrong.
And I would be saying only that if he hadn't yelled and screamed and thrown a hissy fit about the inauguration numbers and the women's march, which, by the way, before we move on, I would like to ask Wendy what she thinks of the women's march, because I've seen a lot of things on Twitter, mostly positive, some negative, but I don't want to make you the
I represent all women.
Exactly. Just like I asked Turkey to represent all Saudis and people from the Middle East in general, I'll ask you anyway, nonetheless. What did you think of it? What can you explain it to us? Or I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I think one of the misunderstandings about it was that it was a march for abortion. I think there's definitely concerns about that for many people, and they have a belief about that and a desire for that. But that was maybe one portion of it for some. But for the majority, in my opinion, it was so alarming during the campaign to see the way he treated women, to hear the recording of him essentially bragging about sexual assault, the way he has treated the women he quote-unquote owned during his pageants. I mean, it is the most offensive person you can think of to call your president. It's really difficult on a very visceral level for a lot of women, and should be for a lot of men, and I think it also is for some men. Because it's pretty terrifying. He represents that thing. Go ahead, what were you saying?
To maybe put it a little bit in context, tell me if this is correct or not, but maybe it will help more people realize what this feels like. And I'm not a woman, so you'll tell me if I'm wrong. But it's kind of like a candidate was saying, I had those niggers do my lawn yesterday and they weren't really doing it well. So I smacked them over the head a couple of times and then they worked better. And then he said, oh, but I don't mean it. And it's just but it still feels like that is my guess. And I said the N-word,
then,
the actual N-word, just for shock effect. I hope it.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I think it really is. And that's what you're finding a lot. When I talk to family and friends who were at various marches and their experience, that this, like, it's a position of being powerless, rape, attack, all of those things. And I can say this, any woman listening is going to know what I'm talking about. You're walking to your car and you hold your keys a certain way in your hand. and you hold them in such a way that you can open your car really quickly, and if you needed to stab someone with your key, you could. How many men can relate to that? That every day you walk around just because dudes are bigger than you, and you don't always know you're safe. So that's every woman. And then you take those who have actually been assaulted, or those who have had that power taken away by being sexually harassed, even just verbally. And so there is this thing we all share collectively, and it doesn't matter which side of the aisle you're on. For women, there is a thing we all have experienced. And he just, it's like he represented that to some extent. And it's like a punch to the gut when he won. And so I think that the female response to that was one of peaceful marching. Now, did they clean up their messes everywhere they went? I don't know. But for the most part, it was pretty peaceful and, you know, well-organized, and it was a wonderful thing for them to do. Now, what does it mean in the long run? I'm not sure. But what it does for them in the moment and does for all of us in the moment is sort of like, hold on, we don't have to be victimized by this. We have some power, because that's the feeling. And I don't know if you saw any pictures of Trump with his wife at various times. I feel like we need a march to rescue her. I mean, yeah, if I've ever seen a kept woman, it's her, and an abused woman. And it's just so hard. And so,
well, I mean, okay, we don't know that she's in that situation. She might just be nervous, and she might just be, you know, in a place where she didn't think she was going to be. Let's not, you know, I don't think we can make
the
assumption.
Maybe you haven't seen the video of him saying something to her, and then he turns around and her face.
No, I've seen it, but this is...
Are you denying us the right to make assumptions about his wife when he just makes assumption about how many people attended?
I think
amen, turkey.
I think it's a dangerous path to go down, because when you start making those assumptions...
He denies global warming. He denies the effects of global warming. He stops the scientists from reporting about it. And you want us to stop talking about what we think that his wife looks like?
Yes, I do. No. Because I would like us to be better and to show the way.
Hold on. I agree. But as a therapist, I watched her talking to many, many women who are making therapy appointments just to discuss this. He triggers this part. So whether it's true or not, this is a man that many people can't respect. We're just taking one slice of why it's difficult. Now, there are women who love him, think he's wonderful. Great. Sure, it's not everybody. But there is something about that. That explains the marches to me, and the unifying thing and the peaceful aspect of it. And the, hey, we have power and you can't tell us who we are and that we're objects is really heartening. And it's a beautiful thing. Because here's the thing. In a week or two, I'm taking my kids to Berlin, and we're going to look at that wall, and we're going to talk about that wall, and we're going to talk about why walls are built, and we're going to talk about fear and what that does. And when you shut everyone down with fear, what happens? And that's fine. I won't say that she's an abused woman, but I still feel like rescuing her. But there is some very real conversations that have to happen about human beings will recreate history if we don't know history. Like, it's crucial that we just make this a priority. And that, to me, was a peaceful march of just one step. There's a march planned for science, people. March, I think, or April, there will be a scientist march of like, hey, science is real. Please don't defund us. I mean, people are scared for all the things that have sort of are fundamental to some of our society. It's a big deal.
I definitely agree. And, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the looting and rioting that happened on the day before the inauguration. And that was a complete facepalm for me, because I thought, you know, that was so disgraceful. And it's exactly when I say, you know, we have to be to show the way and we have to be better. This is exactly the opposite. And this is the kind of things that makes people say, well, look, you also had that. And I agree. There is no way to defend it. But then the Women's March, which was so peaceful and so powerful, I think, because it was voicing an opinion which is important and which is, you know, it's kind of like the Tea Party or the Occupy. I don't know if it will go anywhere, but it's important that it happens. And it's very different from the tweets that we all keep retweeting. This is real and this is important. And I've seen There are some people organize trying to get together to organize a thing for tax day to get him to release his tax returns, which I don't think he's ever going to do. That is also, you know, if you get down in the street and march for something, it puts people on notice. It shows that there is something real happening. And the fact that there was no incident in that march is amazing, because anything that would have happened would have been twisted into terrorism or, you know, something unconscionable. I also thought it was incredibly powerful and it was very important. That thing about not doing the same thing is very important to me, because I don't know if it's enough. Maybe you do have to play dirty at some point, but I often reference that. You know, it's Star Wars, the dark side. Every single great story that has ever been written about anything remotely, fantastical or science fiction-y or anything, it's always like letting anger and fear and frustration rule your emotions. And I think, maybe I'm wrong, but I think that nationalism and saying us first is a legitimate feeling that you always have to have some of it, but it does seem like there's an excess of it, and that can become dangerous. And you're talking about the Berlin Wall, and I think some people are going to say, Berlin Wall, Nazi war, blah, 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 you're exaggerating. It is looking further, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 steps, but it is taking the world 1 or 2 steps closer to less safety. And that is a concern for everyone. I don't understand how you can say, everything's going to be absolutely fine. Maybe it's going to be, but I don't know. I don't know.
Well, there's another thing happening on like the streets in the US, at least from the things I'm listening to and talking to people, that for white middle-class folks who did just fine under Obama and their lives are just kind of going along, they're like, wow, the Nazi symbols showing up in New York and in Jewish parts of town, just the anti-immigration stuff sort of showing up, or the emboldenedness of, you know, the white supremacists in the United States, various groups that are just kind of coming out of the woodwork, like, yeah, we got a voice now, is really alarming to, you know, your average white American. It's not so alarming for people who have been yelled at to go back home when their skin isn't white or are treated in ways that are disrespectful. So I think what's happening really for a lot of people who are comfortable in their own little seats, it's like, wow, how is this happening? And for others, they're not all that surprised. And my comment about the wall is not, oh no, it's going to be Nazi Germany. It's, we need to understand why someone builds a wall. Someone builds a wall out of fear and not out of thoughtfulness, sophistication, ability to collaborate and work with and unite. And that's the thing that's scary is, you know, the skill set we have in the White House is not to unite and to improve the world or the planet or people. It's to get, you know, protect number one. And that's really, that's where I think it gets dangerous.
And, you know, I mean, I don't know how delicately I can keep putting all this, but I don't think he's Hitler. I'll say it right now. I don't think he's...
Yeah, no.
You know, there's no... That's not the point. As you're saying, this is not about Nazi. It's about a less safe world. And he is doing these things... Anyway, okay. Well, I think we're sort of starting to talk in circles. I hope I've. Yeah, go ahead.
As you say, it's just about not going backwards. Let's just not go backwards in any way, please.
Yeah. and again, all of the things that we said, you know, when I was saying I don't think he's Hitler, I don't think he's a despot. I don't think he's a dictator. I don't think any of those things. But there is a legitimate concern that he's taking things in a worrisome direction. And every time for a year and a half now, every time we've said, oh, but it will be fine because this, oh, but it will be fine because this will stop him, or this will happen, or he's not serious, or every time we've been proven wrong, right? Even those who had concerns about him, but thought, yeah, but it's not real. It's not. So at what point do we start saying, all right, maybe there's a chance that this is actually a concern? You know, and we should sort of think about it and be ready for it. At what point? Because if now is not the point when, and I go back to the, you know, to the falsehoods in the press conferences as sort of a canary in a coal mine. You're like, well, it seems like they're really taking all of this in the direction we imagine they would if everything went wrong. So even if you think that he's going to do a lot of good policies-wise and economy-wise, I would really hope that you keep an eye out for not even fairness, but democracy and rule of law and all of those things. Because the fact that he does some good things in one area doesn't absolve everything else that happens elsewhere. I hope. I certainly hope. And I also hope that he does well economically, because there's, well, if I'm being honest, I don't hope he does well, because then it will legitimize him. But I will admit that maybe he will do well. And for the American people, I sort of understand that hopefully he does well. So I don't know. This is a cop-out. Anyway, we've been talking about this for an hour. Jeez, I thought we were going to do 20 to 30 minutes. What do you guys think? Do we do local stuff, or has that all been eaten by the Trumpiness of the month? Do you have any like fun, cool, interesting local stories, things that are happening in your countries?
The world is depressing. There's nothing exciting.
All right. I will say one thing because it's sort of related. We've had the social. We're having now the socialist primaries in France, and I talked about the Republican primaries in previous months, and we've had one candidate. But the problem is, on the left side, we're having basically for the Socialist Party, we're going to get one candidate. And there is another member of the socialist government that's gone out and said he wouldn't participate in the primaries. He's a candidate right now. And he's more to the center of the political spectrum. And another one, which is very much to the left of the political spectrum, he's basically a communist, kind of, and he's getting a lot of support because a lot of people are saying the socialists basically did a social democracy job, and that's too much the right. So basically, what it comes down to is that we have three socialist candidates that are going to be in the running, unless they end up grouping together. But I doubt all of them are going to group together. So what that means is that the socialist vote is going to be split at the election in May. And if it goes on like this, it's very likely that the second round of the election is going to be the right-wing candidate versus the Marine Le Pen, the far-right candidate, because of that split in the base of the left. So this is a real possibility right now, because of that there is no way that those three are going to get enough votes on their own to compete with the right-wing candidate, so with the Republican. We'll see what happens. Maybe they'll band together. And especially the there was one scandal that is affecting the Republican now, because his wife has worked as an aide, but apparently it was a fake job or something. And they're trying to justify it right now, but it's sort of throwing a kind of an air of culpability on him. I don't know how it will end up. But anyway,
what I'm hearing here, Patrick, is the scenario you said that it will never, ever happen looks like it's possible now in France.
I always thought that there was a strong possibility that Marine Le Pen was going to be on the second round. I have heard an interview with her, and it's interesting how combative she's getting. She's really taking a page out of Trump's book and out of the Brexit book. They're going to try to do exactly the same thing in France. I still don't think it's going to work out. She has very nationalistic tendencies and policies, but she's not crazy like Trump. She's not like narcissistic in that way. She's fighting on the policies, on the nationalistic policies.
Trump is unique. Forget Trump. Yeah, he's very unique.
But I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I'm not going to repeat what I said in the last episode, but I still don't think, we'll see, maybe my opinion will evolve, but I still don't think in that scenario of Republican versus Front National, I still don't think she'll get it, but we'll see. Right, so that's the big, you know, the big concern right now, and we'll see what happens. We're going to have the socialist candidate designated tomorrow, and then we'll see if the three socialists get together. But it's really interesting because you have the basically communist candidate, Mélenchon, who is saying so many of the same things as people were saying during the Brexit, you know, the Farage side of the Brexit and the Trump side and the Bernie side. You know, it's this very large part of the population that is completely disenfranchised that goes either to the far left or to the far right. And it's very similar people that are saying, we're tired of all of this shit. We want someone that is going to fight for us and not for themselves and the people who are already well off. And I mean, yeah, it's we're seeing this very clearly here. All right. Anything happening in Mexico worth mentioning, Dan? You didn't really get into the reactions to the wall thing and the fact that, you know, does anyone in the country actually think that you're going to pay for it? Or what's the reaction to the claim that Mexico is going to pay for it?
Well, pretty much the reaction has been made in memes. Well, we like memes, to joke about that.
Yeah.
That's correct, about memes. But for example, one of the reactions was that it's economically impossible to be done as it is proposed. And for example, the one of the things that also was proposed, it's the way that we were supposed to be paying for that. It was a 20% taxation for the products that are going to the United States, but there you have a problem, because that tax is not going to be paid by the Mexicans or the Mexican companies, but the end consumer. So that's one of the things that, okay, obviously it kind of scares, because everything that Trump says affects us directly in the economic way. However, most of the things that he has been saying are pretty much impossible to be done, at least how he has been proposing it. Other of the things, well, pretty much this week for Mexico was all in the news. It was like a follow-up of what is happening in the United States. And other of the things that has been happening here, it's like a historical review about all the times that we have had some sort of conflict with our neighbor at the north. And this is at the economical level, the most important, but this is not the first one. Let's remember that we have the Mexican-American War, which was something that came out from the Monroe Doctrine, and we lost pretty much half of our territory to the United States. And, well, that pretty much sucked for all of us. But, for example, at the beginning of the last century, we have another conflict with the United States when we have Francisco I. Madero as one of the first democratic elected presidents in here, and that pretty much moved some of the interest in the United States. Right now, well, we have, let's say, like the third biggest conflict with our neighbor, and obviously we are a little bit scared of that. However, yesterday we have a very interesting press conference made by Carlos Slim, which, if you know, he's well, he owns the New York Times, and he's the fifth richest man in the world. And the reaction that we have here in Mexico for the people, it's kind of interesting because, well, Carlos Slim is the most powerful Mexican, you can say that, in the economic level. But we have also the Mexican president, and the Mexican president doesn't have an approval rating that actually gives you trust, because, well, the approval rating that he has right now is between the 10 and the 12%, which is really, wow, really, really low. However, the way that he reacted to the Trump declarations was as I mentioned before, damn if you do, damn if you don't. Because if he said, well, I want to go to Washington to talk directly with him, what is the deal with this guy? He's willing to pay the wall? Okay, wait. No, he's willing to go there and negotiate. That I believe that that's the most important thing. Right now, we have to listen to each other and understand the points that have to be made. At the end, well, he said, I am not willing to go there. However, yesterday, after it was posted that he wasn't going to go to travel to speak directly with the American president, Trump, after that, said, well, I canceled the meeting. Well, wait a minute. You didn't cancel the meeting. We weren't willing to go there because the conditions weren't in a place that we wanted to be. After that, yesterday, Trump and Enrique Peña Nieto, our president, were in the phone just before Trump had a meeting with Theresa May. And they were talking about 1 hour. And one of the conclusions that they had was, we are not going to talk publicly about the damn wall. Well, let's hope that Trump keeps his part of the agreement, because we know how he is. However, it showed what kind of negotiation power you can have when you're talking with world economies, when you are talking with different countries. You are not just dealing with people at the GOP. You are not just dealing with people from a different business. So that was something that have come this week. I believe that, well, these are interesting times. However, the reaction, as you can expect, it's kind of, it's scary. It's scary times for us in a way. Mm. However, you have different factions, as I mentioned. Carlos Slim, who was like, how can I put it? He was saying positive things about Donald Trump, or surprise, but also because, well, it's kind of difficult for you to say something against someone who is talking positive things about you. And Carlos Slim is a businessman. Mm. So that's something that we have to learn. In this way, perhaps we don't need to treat this just as a politics, but more like a business. So that's the way that at least seems to be working a little bit. So hopefully that will show us a way.
Okay. Well, Wendy, I hope all the women in the Women's March heard that advice. This is how you do it. You treat it not as politics, but as a business.
It's a business. Yeah. Can I share something fun from
please,
Sweden?
Oh, please, please, yes, yes, please, please, Wendy.
We need that.
This is this always cracks me up because, you know, Sweden has real problems. I'm sure. I just don't. It's hard to find out about them because, first of all, they're very worried, of course, about Trump, and human rights are one of their big deals, and so they feel like, you know, we got to step up our game. And but they're having a similar experience with a lot of European countries where sort of the far right parties are getting emboldened and people are, you know, maybe misbehaving a little bit. But I heard a hilarious story. Someone had written some anti-immigrant something on a wall, and an older lady had written a note, handwritten note, put it next to the sign and asked, please, to be kind, and reminded them of all their Swedish values. It was very, very sweet. So that's not really the news I was going to share. I was actually going to share what's been on the radio quite a bit. It's either they talk about Trump or they talk about this. And I think it's just a wonderful problem to have. So they have very generous parental and family leave here. So when you have a baby, you have up to a year's worth of pay to stay home with your child. And the big controversy, which just makes me smile that there has this, because in America, you get 6 weeks and then you're fired or whatever. Like that's not a place to have a baby. It's great to have one here. Anyway, so the year long thing is great. Well, the controversy is there's a 30-day mandatory fathers have to stay home with the baby. And the debate is whether the 30 days can be shared with the mother or it has to be used by the father or forfeited. So that's what we're debating.
Wait. What do you mean? Like, can share it with the mother?
Yeah, so she could. So she technically could take the year and his 30 days and receive full pay, and he doesn't stay home. Or
because we're big fans of
egalitarian.
Basically.
Yeah. So or that the man has to stay with the baby for those mandatory 30 days in order to get the money. Mm-hmm. You know, just trying to keep things equal here.
It's in in Finland. I think it's. what is it, like a year for the mother, and then the father can take a year as well? Or I think it might be a year.
Yes, that's just, it's the same here. It's just the 30 first days is the thing they're debating. Does he have to use those? Can he share those? And that's life in the Nordic world, right?
And, you know, every time we say things like this, I'm sure that some people, you know, get this idea that, oh, this is unsustainable and blah, blah, blah. But you have to remember, countries like Finland and Sweden and other Nordic countries are the best countries to live in from every, you know, almost every metric, like the best educated, the best standard of living, the best everything. So that's always my answer to people talking about either capitalism or socialism in one way or the other. You know, you always have people say, oh, but look, from France, they'll say, oh, look, in the US, it's capitalism and it's horrible. And in the US, they'll say, oh, but look, in France, it's socialism and this is what you get. And I'll say, look at the Nordic countries. You know, they have some measure of capitalism, some measure of socialism, and it works really well.
And it does. But there's one thing, you never see the sun. So there's that.
Right. Maybe that's why, you know, maybe people are so depressed that they have to get down and work and do stuff. You know, I really think there is something to the Protestant ethics and work ethics. You know, it's more responsible, I think, than other brands of Catholicism. I don't know. It feels.
See, that's funny. You're thinking it's religion. I'm thinking it's purely preparing for the weather. So you don't prepare for the weather, you die.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
so
it might
be. I think that might have forced it.
Yeah. It's possible.
Well, at least historically.
So you know what? When we finally get the nuclear winter and the sky is eternally covered with ash for like a few decades, we'll all have to do that anyway. So
yeah, we're prepared. Out.
All right, Turkey, you're the only one who didn't share anything local. Do you want to go with one, or are you too depressed to talk about anything?
Oh, I have no idea. Well, React recently just had a music concert for the first time in years. So I think that's the biggest news at the moment.
So wait, because it...
Who was it? What was the music?
First of all, why didn't you have them before? And why was it possible to happen now? And then who was it?
It depends. We had them some time ago and then they stopped them. And they recently just restarted under the supervision of the Public Entertainment Authority.
But why did they stop? Because it was banned for religious reasons or...?
Yeah, mostly religious. There were opposition to it, so they just decided, you know what, never mind, we don't want to do those anymore. Okay. So people used to travel to Dubai, to Kuwait, to Bahrain to attend music concerts there. And they just recently restarted them in Saudi. I think we're having some in Jeddah, we had it in Riyadh, I think, yesterday. And so on. So, and it's all over Twitter right now. People are discussing it. You have two sides, those who approve and those who oppose. So
tell us exactly what the people who oppose are saying. It's like it's offensive to God, or like it's corrupting the youth, or what is it?
Yeah, all of that. Depending on who you talk to, some of them would consider it is anti-Islamic, it's against Islamic belief. Some would say it's corrupt. People, some would say it leads to things that are even going to be worse. Tomorrow, women and men will be allowed to attend concerts together, stuff like that. So, people
how
have
does
different
that work,
opinions.
By the way, to attend the concert? Do you have like a men's section and a women's section?
I don't know about these concerts, but it would be one of three things: either only women, only men. Or two separate sections, women in one separate section and men in another different separate section. I have no idea about these concerts, how they organized it, if people were allowed from both sexes. So, you know, women are not allowed to attend football matches here.
I'm not surprised. I didn't know, but... so who was... Sorry, I sort of hijacked Wendy's question. Who was it that was it an international
band? It was local. Was local. It was local musicians, Saudi mostly.
Like, was it rock or pop, or was it like...
No. It's traditional. It's more traditional music. It's not rock or pop. It's called it's GCC golf music. So,
and even those things are controversial to some people. Like, how did the people who were for it react? Campaign, like, not campaign, but you know, what would they say when people are saying, well, this is contrary to Islamic values, and like, publicly? Can they?
Oh, yeah. Go on Twitter. You'll find there's a war going on between the people who oppose and who support. And the post, those who support it say it's entertainment. We need this relief. It's good to the soul, for the soul. It's enjoyed. It makes people happy, smile, laugh. It has nothing to do with being anti-Islamic, and so on. And then you have the extremists who say this is anti-Islamic, this is against Islamic beliefs, it leads to corruption and so on. So you have both sides of those, and it's kind of interesting when you see them both fighting on it, and just wait and see how far it goes. Are we going to see more concerts in the future? Are they going to stop the concerts all over again? So it's an interesting concept. We don't have much entertainment in Saudi, so these are something that people need as an outlet for their being bored and sitting and doing nothing.
All right. Well, I mean, it's kind of depressing, but at the same time, it's going in the right direction. I don't know.
Who knows? We'll wait and see.
All right. Well, I guess that is going to be it for this show. Before we leave, though, of course, as always, I will ask each one of you guys if you have an online presence you want to promote. And we'll start with the always happy Turkey.
Yeah, very happy guy. I'm always smiling. And you can find me on Twitter at Turkey Albala, TurkiAlbala. And you can see my happy side and my depressing side and my optimistic side. And let's just say, try to avoid me sometimes.
I always try to avoid you, Turkey. I try, I just never manage. I don't know how it works. Dan, I know you're a podcaster, a content creator as well.
Yes, if you want to listen to podcasts about filmmaking or comics or general culture, you just go to Churros y Palomitas. Well, it will be easier actually to follow me using Twitter, because that will be more understandable. So just follow in twitter.com/DanCampos, and I will post everything that I got in there. So.
Excellent. And the Twitter accounts will be in the notes, as always, in the notes of the show, except for Wendy, who is on Instagram and not Twitter.
I am not on Twitter, no. But I am. You can find me at therapythursdays.com, where I have a little content and you can ask questions. And if you listen to the show and I offended you in any way, don't worry. I have my oldest brother to argue with about this. I don't need to hear from you. I got plenty of people to fight with.
You're missing so much on Twitter. Scott is having the time of his life.
Yeah, it's interesting. Scott, no thanks. Scott Johnson, our good friend and brother of Wendy, has become a little bit more vocal about the concerns he has with the current administration. It's really interesting because he's always been very neutral. And the fact that he... is voicing those concerns is making me think that some people that, I mean, he's never been very happy with Trump, but I'm wondering if some people that weren't in the middle aren't starting to think, well, this isn't really cool. But anyway, sorry, Wendy, keep going.
I heard one theory that Trump's candidacy will just unify everyone based on that it's just too crazy, too much, and we'll all join together. So there's that, maybe.
I think the hashtag MAGA people are never going to let go of Trump, but, you know, maybe those that won't be united won't. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, sorry, didn't mean to launch us back into this. Yes, you were saying, Wendy.
Yeah, find me at Therapy Thursdays if you want a therapeutic question answered, not a political one. This is out of my comfort zone. I have lots of political thoughts, but I thank you for always making me stretch here on the Phileas Club.
That's what we try to do. You know, stretching your mind is just as important as everything else you do. So there you go. That could be a tagline for the show. And if you want to support us, there are a couple of ways you can do that. You can go to iTunes, for example, and leave us a review like Scott Simon did. He said, fantastic, with an exclamation point, 5-star review. So refreshing to hear people discuss debate topics in a civil manner. Very informative to hear multiple viewpoints. Keep up the awesome work, Patrick and guests. Thank you so much. If you don't have, you know, some cash to send our way, you can do that. But if you do, you might want to go to patreon.com/thePhileas Club and give us some money. You all know Patreon. I don't have to explain to you what it is. But we recently did reach the $500 per episode milestone. And I've started doing, I'm preparing a bunch of them, the special episodes. You heard Letad in the previous episode telling you about Thailand and how everyday life is in there. We're going to have a few others hopefully coming in the next few months. But yeah, if you want us to keep going, I mean, it's not like we're going to stop, but still, if you want to encourage us, if you think the show is valuable to you in any way, please do think about maybe contributing some hard-earned cash, you know, all of that money you're going to get extra from Trump making America great again. You can probably give up a little bit of it once you're wealthy and rich. So go to patreon.com/thePhileas Club. And check out the page and see if you want to support the show. And of course, you can follow me at NotPatrick on Twitter and on Facebook. And you can find the show at FrenchSpin.com if you want to go there and discuss everything we've said. If we've not been accurate in some things, if you have contradicting opinions, if you think we've done a good job in some other ways, you feel free to let us know. It's always nice to read the constructive feedback and the civil discussions that continue going on the website after the show is done. Again, that's FrenchSpin.com. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to all of you guys for being on the show, Turkey, Dan, and Wendy. It was a pleasure. And we'll be back in about a month for another episode. Talk to you then. Bye. I don't know if we should be recording this and appending it at the end of the show, but the politically correct thing is not about political correctness. I think if you explain your opinion, it's clear no matter what you say afterwards. And piling on achieves nothing except angering those who already disagree with you, right? So if you want to, it's not even about convincing anyone. It's about enabling the conversation to happen, which is the basis for anything else to take place. And political incorrectness, or however you want to call it, just if you start basically letting go of your feelings and getting angry, then you're not achieving, literally, you're not helping anything. And that's why I, you know, intervened. But does that make sense?
And Turkey... Turkey, thanks for getting my back. That was nice.
No problem with that.
I mean, okay, this is, even if we do put it at the end of the show, this is after the show, it's fair to be completely candid. It definitely does look like she is there suffering and she wants to be rescued, of course.
Oh, that's, it's what terrifying.
You get with this. It's horrible. It's horrible. But you know,
you have seen all the memes, right? They're on, yes, that, like, "Help me, please," or something like that.
Like, light the candle in the tower if you want us to yes, come, like, in Game of Thrones.
That's correct.
No, but seriously. I mean, but she's obviously not comfortable with this. She's, you know, the she no, is never
horrible.
She's never comfortable in a public setting. She's tense. I mean, you can see it in her face. She does that model face all the time with the lips, you know, pursed up. Yeah. And it's, so I think, I really don't think it's, I understand that it might inform the opinion we have of Donald Trump's character, but I don't think it's fair to bring her into it.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.